702
on 92.7
and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DStv channel 856.
6 minutes after 12. Dumelang, good afternoon and welcome to the XG Show on 702 and Cape Talk for the Curious. My name is Clement Manyatela, with you until 1 p.m, bringing you all the important news you need to know about. Connect and engage with us on 011-883-0702. In Cape Town, you can call us on 021-446-0567. You can also send us your short WhatsApp voice messages to 072-702-1702. Coming up, a big focus on the power utility Eskom this afternoon. Load shedding is back, and I'm sure you were caught by surprise. You didn't see it coming. Well, guess what? Eskom also says it didn't see it coming. What does it mean for you? What does it mean for the economy? What does it mean for the integrated resource plan, which is being discussed by Cabinet today? We'll have a wide-ranging discussion on energy this afternoon. Also, Nicholas Nienau is on the stand in the Pretoria High Court, pleading for leniency. He's broken down on the stand. He's issued an apology. He's even read out a poem for the little girl that he violated. I'll play you snippets of what he had to say, and I want to take your views on this one. Plus, we'll be live in KwaZulu-Natal. Two pupils have been killed in another wave of school violence. We'll chat to the MEC of Education in that province. All of this and more coming up in this hour.
702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, it's back, everybody. We will be in the dark this week. Eskom has implemented stage 2 load shedding this morning. That's going to last until 11 p.m. And it means you will be without power for about 4 hours. And we are told that there's a possibility that this latest round of power cuts would actually last for a week. A lack of generational capacity is what is being blamed this time around. I want us to chat now, before we chat to Eskom, to Natasha Mazzoni, who's the DA Shadow Minister for Public Enterprises. Natasha, thanks for your time once again. I spoke to you on this show a week or two ago after you released a statement saying you have informed, you've been informed that Eskom is busy warning municipalities of possibilities of imminent rolling blackouts. I called Eskom immediately and they said there would be no rolling blackouts for the months of September and October, but here we are.
Yes, Clement, unfortunately, this is truly one of the times I wish I wasn't right. We did know that these rolling blackouts are coming. It's simply beyond me why Eskom refused to accept the fact that these rolling blackouts were imminent. We're in a situation now. I'll give you just one example of how adversely this particular rollout of blackouts is affecting us. The matric students are writing their CAT exams today, and the computers are obviously not able to work without electricity. So we have matric students around the country who are unable to do their CAT exam today. We've got businesses who we could have warned in advance. We could have got in dry ice. We could have done a multitude of things to try and help these businesses. But because Eskom was absolutely insistent that this rolling blackout phase would not happen, there's been no forewarning. I mean, we actually knew, if you look at the way the grid operates, Eskom would have known last night that it would be entering a period of rolling blackouts this morning.
Yeah.
And yet the warning only went out this morning 3 hours before they started rolling out the blackouts.
Mm.
So someone at Eskom has got it incredibly wrong, and someone owes the South African public a very, very big apology, and quite frankly, someone's head needs to roll.
Look, in our understanding, and in fact the COO of Eskom spoke to my colleague Eusebius Makaiza this morning, and our understanding is that from Saturday already they had information and they had lost 6 units and they knew about this and they're now tapping into emergency resources. So why are they only coming now warning South Africans an hour before they implement stage 2 load shedding? But we'll speak to them in a short while. I want to understand from you then why you believe that the latest round of power cuts is actually being used by Eskom to bargain for more money, because that's what you say in the statement you released this morning.
It's one of the things that I've said many times. When we uncovered state capture at Eskom, one of the things that we discovered was that there were serious rounds of load shedding that had happened during the state capture period, which we now know were actually forcibly put on the South African public to ensure that coal contracts went through with certain companies. So we know that load shedding was also, not always, but in certain instances, created to enable state capture. Now, look, I don't like conspiracy theories. I don't enter conspiracies. I'm a person who likes, I'll only say something if I know it for sure. But here's the thing, Clement. We can't at this point not look at the fact that Eskom is about to take Mercer to court because they want an increase in the tariffs. We've got the appropriations bill going through Parliament, which is highly debatable, which looks at another massive bailout from the South African public that will have to get the failing entity. So, you know, here's the thing. Already on Saturday, we knew we were going into emergency measures. Last night, Eskom had to have known they couldn't keep the lights on. So one does start to ask the question, if all of these things are happening in a row, is it coincidence, a really nasty coincidence, or are we as South Africans being used as bargaining chips and pawns in a massive chess table? And if that is the case, then Eskom has serious questions to answer, because then they are no better than those who took us into the state capture crisis that we find ourselves in now.
All right, Natasha Mazzoni, DA Shadow Minister for Public Enterprises, thank you so much for chatting with us. All right. The problem with the power cuts is that they not only inconvenience you and I, but they also impact so heavily on our already sluggish economy. Remember in the first quarter of this year when the economy contracted by 3.2%, that was the largest decline since the global financial crisis 10 years ago. And the statistician general, Resenga Maluleka, indicated that the rolling blackouts contributed significantly to this low GDP growth. And for our economy to grow, we need a reliable and sustainable supply of electricity. Let's speak to acting CEO of Business Unity South Africa now, Kas Kuvadia. Mr. Kuvadia, good afternoon. Thank you for speaking to us. So this announcement by Eskom this morning that we may endure the power cuts for about a week, not good for business?
No, it's not good for business. I think one of the reasons offered when we had our economic growth went up in the last quarter was that that was one of the positive effects of no load shedding in the quarters before that. And that had a positive impact on mining and other sectors of the economy. So it's quite clear. I mean, the data is there, and the data shows that load shedding does have a significantly negative impact on the economy. And given that we are battling to get our economy going, given that we are battling to get investment into the country, this does not bode well.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Mr. Kuvadia, that this happens as the integrated resource plan, which has been years in the making and basically maps out South Africa's energy mix for the next decade, is due to be discussed by Cabinet today before being released for public comment. What kind of energy plan are you as business hoping for?
Well, I think that I wouldn't say the fact that load shedding is happening now and the integrated resource plan is going to Cabinet today. While coincidental, we were informed and the government had indicated.
Yep, Mr. Kuvadia. All right, listen, let's try and reestablish that line with Kas Kuvadia, who is the acting CEO of Business Unity South Africa. We were having a chat there about the integrated resource plan. Remember how it's been in the making for a couple of years now, and it basically speaks to the country's future of energy. And our understanding is that Cabinet is going to be discussing this energy plan today, and business has its own plans on how it wants to see this plan look like. And of course, and I saw in the statement that they released this morning, Business Unity South Africa saying that, you know, the gazetting of this IRP needs to also be followed by an immediate ministerial determination for the procurement of new generation capacity. So let's try and reestablish that line now with Kas Kuvadia. Mr. Kuvadia, I hope we have a much better line to you. You are still speaking to me about what you hope as business this integrated resource plan will look like.
Yeah, so we're saying that we need the integrated resource plan must talk to Eskom and must talk to an Eskom that's fit for purpose for business and fit for purpose to ensure a responsible transition from coal to other sources of energy. We are certainly clear that, as I said earlier, that the gazetting of the IRP needs to be followed by a ministerial determination for the procurement of new generation capacity. And the restructuring of Eskom needs to be considered within the context of a gazetted IRP. We've argued consistently that a vertically integrated state-owned monopoly utility is not good, and it's out of step with global trends, and we would want to see a mix of energy use. Mm-hmm. We would want to see more movement towards renewable energy, which the unit costs of which have gone mm-hmm. down substantially since the first tranche of renewable energy contracts. Mm-hmm. And we would want to see pretty good progress on the recommendations made by the President's advisory team on Eskom in restructuring Eskom and breaking it down.
Mm.
We'd also like to see some immediate movement on the appointment of a capable and a professional CEO at Eskom, and we would want to see the Eskom board fit for purpose so that we have the mix of skills on the Eskom board that can actually take Eskom forward. Mm.
And for it to be appropriately capitalized and I suppose competitive as well, Mr. Kovedia, you've already mentioned the appointment of a permanent capable CEO, but there are also those issues of debt. It's still over 400 billion rand in the red, and then you've got the restructuring of the utility that is still on hold. So not much happening on that front as well.
Yeah, look, we are told that a statement will be made on Eskom by the President, hopefully before the medium-term budgetary policy statement. And we hope that that statement will consider some thinking on how we actually address Eskom's debt.
Mm.
It is certainly the most significant issue for the country at the moment, given our fiscal position currently. And that is why I think that you can't address Eskom's debt without actually looking at its restructuring, without looking at why Eskom is not even able to earn enough to actually service its debt.
Yeah.
And those are all issues that are integrated, and that's why this integrated resource plan is so important.
Yeah. Thank you so much for speaking to us. Acting CEO of Business Unity South Africa, Cas Kovedia, 19 minutes after 12.
Connect.
Engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
23 minutes after 12. All right, we've been focusing on Eskom having implemented stage 2 load shedding this morning. And we welcome on the line now COO at the power utility, Jan Oberholzer. Mr. Oberholzer, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Good afternoon, Clement.
Yeah. I saw the alert that was issued by Eskom on Twitter. It was just an hour or so before the power utility implemented stage 2 load shedding. Why were South Africans given such short notice?
Look, we had the problem starting on Saturday around about 9 o'clock, you know, with the Medupi conveyor system we lost this conveyor system, the coal conveyor system, into the power station. So there we lost more than 1,200 megawatts. Then we started losing from Saturday afternoon an additional 6 units of about 600 megawatts each up until last night. As of yesterday, around about 5 o'clock, we lost 4 units. And then during the night, we lost an additional 2 units, another 1,200 megawatts. And then since Sunday, we had to use quite a lot of our emergency diesel as well as water. And when we had the assessment made late last night, early hours of the morning, based on the other two additional units that we lost last night, we had no alternative, unfortunately, due to the fact that the reserves, the emergencies, water as well as diesel being very low. In order to protect the integrity of the system, then to come to the decision that we have to load shed.
But Mr. Oberholzer, if you knew on Saturday already that you were losing some of the units, why didn't you communicate then? And I'm saying it was short notice today because the DA is telling us that they've been receiving calls from several schools where they speak about how they've been impacted by the rolling blackouts, especially on today's computer applications practical exams. So had the communication been sooner, as soon as because you realized that you were losing the units, and maybe South Africans could have prepared much better?
Clement, I believe the point that you make is valid. We have assessed early this morning and during the course of today the situation that you're talking about. However, I must state that we didn't believe that we would deteriorate so quickly to the state that we are now. But we've taken note, it's not only you that has made this comment, and we've taken note of this, and we will definitely deal with this and take it to heart.
So the problems that Eskom is facing there, you know, now, doesn't that have to do with the issue of maintenance of infrastructure? The boiler tube leaking, you know, the problems with the conveyor belts. So if it's to do with maintenance, is it really a surprise? Because we've known challenges around maintenance at the power utility.
Clement, let me deal first with the conveyor system. That is a new system that was built from the nuclear power station. So that is not an issue of that. So we haven't done maintenance for many years. As we speak, I have a team on site that is looking at the root cause, what has happened. So soon we will know, and we will know then what the cause of that is, and we'll deal with that. Now, coming back to the issue of boiler tube leaks, yes, I believe that is a lack of maintenance. We also decided some years ago, to do away with our boiler care maintenance program. And we've started it since the beginning of the year again, but unfortunately it is a tough road to catch up on what you don't know is waiting for you. So the system, some parts of it, because our system is relatively old, you know, on average our coal-fired power plant is 37 years old. And so we need to do more maintenance and more inspections on it, which we haven't done in the past, and that's what we're picking up now, and that's part of our 9-point recovery plan, and we are dealing with that. But unfortunately, it's not what people want to hear. It's going to take, unfortunately, some more time.
Yeah, and what more time are we talking here? Are we talking a week? Could it go into the second week?
No, the load shedding itself, we realistically believe it's a week.
It's a week.
So yeah, the boiler, you know, the units on that shut down due to the boiler tube leaks, the 6 units, 5 of them are planned to come back by the end of the weekend. However, as we speak, we have another 3 units that is running at this point in time, generating electricity with running with boiler tube leaks. So that needs to be assessed all the time. And so we will have to take that down in, you know, we don't know exactly when we plan when we will take it down, but it will depend on the system.
All right. Thank you for chatting to us. Jan Oberholzer is the COO of Eskom. Have you ever wondered whatever happened to the external engineers and auditors? Remember them. They were announced by Finance Minister, and the idea was that they would be brought to help Eskom get to the bottom of the crisis at the power utility, because the issue is, it's about maintenance of infrastructure, and it's collapsing the infrastructure. It's old. It hasn't been maintained in a long time. So it's almost as though we're waiting for that infrastructure to collapse, and then Eskom comes and announces these power cuts. Let me know what your frustrations are on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567.
702.
702 for the curious.
On 92.7 and 106 FM.
So, convicted rapist Nicholas Nee now has taken the stand in mitigation of sentence on the first day of sentencing proceedings in the Pretoria High Court. He raped the girl in a toilet cubicle at a Draws restaurant last year. The state has already rejected. In fact, his plea explanation is now pushing for a maximum sentence. And in a bid for leniency, Nee now has detailed his history of drug use and apologized to his victim and of course her family, but he also took some time to speak about his own family.
There's many things I would like to say to my family, but I'll keep it short. I'd like to start off to my son. He was born whilst I was in prison. I just want to apologize to him. I think I owe him the biggest apology. I know what it feels like growing up without a father, and possibly he runs the same risk. I hope to be a part of his life one day, but I'd like to apologize to him for making this mistake. For hurting his mother. I'd like to apologize to his mother. She's an amazing woman. She stood by me throughout my addiction. And finally, now she's had enough. We still speak, and I'd like to apologize to her, and I wish her all the best for the future. I'd like to tell her that I would always love her, and that I'd always love my son. And I wish her full happiness in the future. I hope that she can find it in her heart to forgive me for what I've done. I've hurt her, I've exposed her, and I'm terribly sorry for that, and I hope that you can forgive me. Lastly, to my grandmother. My grandmother is my idol.
All right, so he also said more things. In fact, he broke down while he was reading out a poem that he wrote for the seven-year-old girl that he attacked in that restaurant, and this is how he read out that poem.
The broken heart of an innocent child. Her family falls apart, and that's putting it mild. She may never forgive, nor ever forget the pain I would leave, and forever regret. She'd awaken once again from the same bad dream, barely even 10, tears flowing like a stream. With her mother by her side, they sit and mourn as one. And even though they tried, they could never see the sun. With the morning on its way, she would have to go to class, wishing she could stay, but knowing she has to pass.
All right, so Nicholas Ninau saying that all of this has nothing to do with him wanting a lenient sentence. Do you believe that? I'll take your calls.
702.
WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Good afternoon, Clement. It's Mose in Midrand. It's rather sad again when we see these things that are happening to our young children out there in terms of this young rapist who's now going to have to spend the rest of his life, hopefully, in prison. But the sad part for me is this whole thing is, most of the time, it just reminds me of Ujubjub. Jubjub killed children, and then today he's on our screens and life goes on for him. What about the friends and the families of those people who are affected by the children that he killed? And the same with Nicholas Nina here, we're listening to his poem now. At the end of the day, I think our children are the ones who lose more than these criminals. It's really sad for me.
Listen, I totally agree with you. It's very sad. And, you know, there was a time when he started apologizing in court, and he didn't start apologizing to the victim or the family of this little girl that he violated. He started by apologizing to his son, the mother of his son, his grandmother, and spoke about how his grandmother is his role model. And then the prosecutor asks, and then the victim, and then he goes into, you know, the apology that he has for the victim, and also just that poem that he has written for him. And he says, for her, and he's saying this has nothing to do with him wanting leniency. And I wonder if you believe that all of this and the stories that he's sharing have nothing to do with him wanting a lesser sentence. To the lines we go now. Anthony, good afternoon. You want to also weigh in on this issue of Nicholas Ninau?
Yes, I want also to make a point with that man they are going to sentence today.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he's just talking stories that he was using the drugs, but he must go and rot in jail to rape a young lady.
Mm. All right. Anthony, yeah? Continue?
Yes, no, I finished.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Anthony saying Nicholas Ninau must go and rot in jail. Do you agree with that? Or do you think we need to look at restorative justice? We need to also take into account some of the stories that he shared, particularly about his background and his problems with drug addiction. But certainly the focus has to be on the victim, the little girl that he violated at Dross. It's going up to 14 minutes before 1 o'clock.
Connect.
Engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
All right, so the SABC was in Parliament yesterday, and it says it's focusing on new sources of revenue, and they've increased cost-cutting measures as they attempt to move away from its reliance on government bailouts. And speaking of government bailouts, remember they had received that 2.1 billion rand, and of course they will receive the remaining 1.1 billion rand, which will be transferred once it meets a number of preconditions that are set by the National Treasury. Let's speak to the Deputy Minister of Communications now, Pinky Kikana. Thank you so much, Deputy Minister, for chatting to us.
Thank you, Clement, and thank you to 702 listeners. Mm.
So the public broadcaster, you know, tabling its 2018-2019 annual report in Parliament, you know, last month, they spoke about a net loss of about 482 million rand for the year ending March this year. What is the strategic plan, especially from the department side, to help the SABC to be back on its ground, but also to help it implement the turnaround strategy?
Look, the department is a shareholder in the SABC, that you know. And we have been working very close with the SABC for the for all its years. And I will take you just quickly on the trend that has been happening, especially on the losses. It's 2016-17, they lost 1 billion rand. 17-18, it was at 744. Now, 18-19, it's sitting at 483 million. The loss, it's a regrettable one, but the way it has been reducing, it shows there's an element of commitment to work towards being accountable, but also making sure that you live less. You live what? You make sure that you survive with the less that you have.
Yeah.
And if you look at the 483 million, 406 million out of that was around the sports rights.
Yeah.
And that's why there was a serious outcry this year. And we thank PSL and SAFA to come into the board. But also, it's not only speaking to the sports rights around soccer only. We need to look at the totality of all the sporting codes because it's all about social cohesion.
Yeah.
And if you look at what the SABC has presented in Parliament, we expect a break even in the next 24 months. Part of it, which they also gave to Parliament, was to say, look, we've even reduced from irregular expenditure by 41%, from 570 million to 336 million. And
so,
irregular does not mean money was not well spent, but it only says you don't plan accordingly, you do this, you buy abruptly.
Yeah,
and Deputy, all those things.
And Deputy Minister, for the SABC to also be able to plan accordingly and also implement the turnaround strategy and also some of the preconditions, they're going to need that chief restructuring officer. When is that restructuring officer going to be appointed for the SABC? Because my understanding is that was one of the preconditions for the bailout.
Well, the minister, our minister, Stellan Daveni-Abrahams, and the Minister of Finance will be looking at that. And Cabinet, it's not unique to SABC only. All the ailing SOEs, the chief restructuring officer will be appointed, and that will be spoken to between the Minister of Finance and the relevant minister. And this time around, it will be the Minister of Communications and Digital Technologies, Ms. Stella, who will be dealing with all those things. But if you look at the preconditions, part of it, especially on what has been given. Remember, we want SABC wanted 3.2 billion. They got 2.1 billion because Treasury was saying there were three other preconditions that were not met, which spoke to the core and the non-core assets. And the core assets were looking at radio stations or TV channels that can be sold. And that will need proper engagement and strategy on how we go around some of those things. Mm. The non-core speaks to you know, your buildings and other related things or land that the SABC owns. So we still need to go back to Treasury around that. The other area is around the public-private partnership model, and the other one speaks to commercial your Radio Metro versus Ukozi FM. The other one is commercial. The other one is public. And the reporting around how this
Deputy,
kind of commercial and public radio stations are working how do we make sure that we report separately?
Deputy Minister of Communications, I appreciate you coming through. Pinky Kikana is the Deputy Minister there, chatting to us about the developments coming out of Parliament yesterday, the SABC executives being present there.
702. SMS us now on 31702.
I'm just about to chat to the DA about the upcoming Federal Council, but before then, I want to tell you an alert that I've just received in the last couple of minutes. Minister of Justice Ronald Lamola has announced that the presidential pardon application of FeesMustFall activist Khanya Qekeshe has been put on hold. He's been briefing the Committee on Justice and Correctional Services on the department's annual report. This afternoon, he's in Parliament, and he says that he has been advised that Qekeshe has applied for leave to appeal, and this effectively means that the application for a pardon cannot be entertained alongside with the judicial process. So that is a development coming out of Parliament, that announcement being made by the Minister of Justice, Ronald Lamola. But let's look at the DA now. It will be holding its Federal Council this weekend, and apparently the DA will know its new federal chair by midday on Sunday. It's going to be an important one, but politically also for the fate of DA leader Musi Maimane. Let's speak to Desiree van der Walt, who is the presiding officer for the Federal Council elections. Desiree, good afternoon. Thanks for your time. Is it all systems go for this weekend?
Yes, indeed. We are 90% there. Our voters roll has been signed off, and our delegates have been elected, obviously, on the voters roll, and our ballot papers have been printed. So now waiting our delegates to arrive safe.
And how many members are you expecting there? And when will the DA members also just know who the federal chair is? Will it be on Saturday or on Sunday?
We roughly estimate around 155, 160 voting delegates that will attend the Federal Council meeting Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday afternoon, the last item on the agenda of Federal Council, I will introduce the four candidates, and they will each have 5 minutes to motivate delegates why they should vote for him or her.
Yeah.
I will also explain the voting procedures, and the council will close. And on Sunday morning, 7 to 8:45, we have the registration of the delegates, and they will also sign for their ballot papers. They will have to prove identification, of course, before you can get a ballot paper, and they will go directly into the voting hall where the booths are for voting. And straight after voting is closed, we will be in a different venue. We will be counting the votes. We'll invite everybody to watch, the agents and the candidates, and Federal Council will continue with its own program. And round about 11, 12 o'clock, when counting is done, I will announce the new Federal Council chairperson of the DA.
Desiree, are these four contenders, allowed to campaign ahead of, the election this coming weekend? And how do you determine and define campaigning? Can they do interviews? What is it that they are not allowed to do before Saturday?
Well, I think the first thing to note of importance is that this is not a political office that deals with the public. This is an internal election of a chairperson of our council. So, yes, indeed, candidates can campaign. They can take their campaign internally to the delegates that will be attending Federal Council and who's got voting rights. We have been monitoring all the media, the TV, radio, everything, and all candidates, have been doing quite well. What we have not allowed is the mere fact that this is an internal position.
Okay.
It is not going to allow debates where the public is invited, because the public doesn't vote for this.
Yeah, it's an internal DA matter. Thank you for speaking to us. An internal DA election. Desiree van der Walt is the presiding officer for the Federal Council. 3 minutes before 1 o'clock, two pupils have been killed in another wave of school violence, this time in KwaZulu-Natal. A grade 11 pupil from the Eastwood Secondary School in Pietermaritzburg was stabbed yesterday afternoon, allegedly by fellow pupils after an earlier altercation. Let's speak to MEC of Education in KwaZulu-Natal, Kwazi Mshengu. MEC, thank you so much for speaking to us. My understanding is you visited the school. What happened here? What explanation did you get?
Thanks, Clement. Good day to you and your listeners. Let me first indicate that the correct report that currently it's only one learner who passed on.
Okay.
The other one, we have been advised that he's still in the critical condition in the hospital, and really we're hoping that he will be able to pull through. I'm currently at Eastwood meeting with the community. We had to close the school today because and suspend the classes today because the situation as at yesterday was really getting out of hand. We understand that this thing resulted from an altercation which came from a destructive game. I understand that it's called bombing, which is led by the matriculants. Apparently, it's a game that has been taking over a place over years in the school where matriculants will vandalize some properties of the school, attack other learners with their condoms filled with water, the paint, and all of that. It's something that's developed into a culture that all the class of matriculants will then have to do that before they leave school. And then, unfortunately, the other boy then decided to retaliate because he was not happy with the manner in which he was treated, then which led to the passing on then of the other guy. Unfortunately, Clement, this is now becoming a community issue and is bordering along racial lines between the colored community and the African community. That is why yesterday we also had to request the intervention of the police to calm the situation. And I'm here today also to interact with the parents as well as the community around this matter.
Okay, MEC, thank you so much for that quick update. Kwazi Mshengu also clarifying there that there's only one pupil that has died, another one in a critical condition.